Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Action.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter/X, Instagram, your TV, maybe. I don't know. Maybe it's going there. I honestly don't even know anymore. Wherever it is, maybe you're listening later on Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. We're very excited to have you here. And we have a packed show for you this evening. But before we even bring in any of the guests into the show, we got a little something we got to do right here at the top of the month. Every month, we have people who support us over on Patreon.com/comicbookclub. At the $5 and up level, we shout out a little bit of thank you to everybody. So we're going to read off their names now. I think if it's okay with you guys, I was going to go first. Pete, you go second, and Justin,
all right,
you
great,
go
let's
third.
Do it. Thank good? You guys so much.
Nice. All right,
no problem.
Let's do it live.
Okay, let's do it live. Ornis Larson.
Aaron C. Hollis.
Adam DeRose.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Elena Fontenot.
Amanda Harris.
Andrew Primo.
Ashy G.
Beercat PhD.
Carrie Matthews.
Chris Leatherman.
Christina Jaramillo.
Christina Rensfield.
Chris Terlizzi.
Clemens Luer.
Dan Snow.
Daniel Cabral.
Daniel Fuentes.
Daniel Warden.
Closing out the Danny block with Danny Heck.
Debbie Gloom.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Mainhart.
Doug Sadoway.
Dylan L-J.
Nice. Way to say it all. Eduardo Martinez.
Ebbick Quish.
Enrique Jooms.
Gerard DeVillier.
Ian Rainey.
Isaac Carter.
Jake Fry.
James Connolly.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
John George.
John Henderson.
Jonathan Jong.
Jonathan McCool.
Joshua W. Bronson.
Joshua Wright.
Julian Lobato.
Casey Newhaven.
Kelby.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Kieran Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Lawana Thomas.
Lucas Inc.
Mad Max Pliskin.
Matt Tice.
Matthew C. Hernandez.
Matthew DePalma.
Michael McAuliffe.
Michael Tillman.
Nelson Kelso Martinez.
Nick G.
Nick Grayson.
Official CBC chef Brett Macris. Chef.
Omnia Soul Art.
Oren Dix.
Pedro A. Rangel.
Provocative Ambulance.
Rev Mikey.
Robert Pettinato.
Roxanne Tyler.
Get my mother's name out of your mouth. People. Get my mother's name.
I love your mom.
Sarah John Mueller.
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott England.
Stanley.
Tamila Rush.
Taylor Bryan.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Bench.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
William Leach.
Zachary Bachman.
And that's where my list ended.
Zika's Viral Comics. Thank you so much, everybody, for supporting us. If you'd like to support us at patreon.com/comicbookclub, it starts at $2 a month, very low. And not only do you get access to our very active Patreon Slack, you also get access to our back catalog of podcasts from 2011 all the way through 2023. That is literally thousands of podcasts, some of which
and
are
now
no
24.
Longer...
That's
no. I put up 24 at the end of the year. They'll get access.
Oh, really?
At the end of the year. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I don't put them up constantly.
You learn how the business.
My time is at a premium, Justin. Come on.
I know that's true. Comic Book Club news is so short. You got to go.
I know. I do got to go. And you got to go support patreon.com/comicbookclub. We really appreciate everybody who supports at any level. But we got some great guests for you here.
Yeah, we do. Let's get into it.
Yes, let us get into it with first one of our favorite guys to talk to. Very excited to talk to him about his recent foray into the Energon universe for Skybound and Image Comics. Joshua Williamson, everybody. Hello.
Hey!
Welcome. So good to see you. Oh. So excited to talk about this stuff. You are, I don't know. I mean, we'll see how it expands. You're the greatest. But you're also one half of the architects right now behind the Energon universe. Kicked off with Void Rivals, went into Transformers. We had Duke number one last month, and this month we're getting Duke number two, which is kicking off the G.I. Joe part of the universe. And Cobra Commander is coming up pretty soon as well. Before we get into that, though, I did want to mention every week we have Brett Macris, who we mentioned earlier, is a professional chef down in New Orleans. He is launching a new restaurant this month that I'm blanking on the name of, but Justin, you probably remember it, can mention in a minute.
It has not been announced yet, so we shouldn't say it. But
okay, there we go. Man. Anyway, he either curates or designs a drink, and this week he designed a drink based on the Joe books, a Yo Joe.
It's
rye whiskey, limoncello, and a lemon rind. And it is delicious. It is a real American hero of a drink. So there you go.
That is awesome. I love whiskey. So that's that is definitely a drink for me. Thank you very much. That's awesome. I will totally make that and drink that. My wife got me a bunch of whiskey stuff for Christmas. So yeah, I love drinking whiskey. So that's awesome. Oh, yeah. Man, that's rad. Awesome.
Well, another delicious cocktail from Brett and some delicious comics from you. So let's jump into them. I want to talk about just generally coordination. Oh, hold on. Coordination first. We talked to Daniel Warren Johnson about this a little bit, about Transformers, but obviously you're expanding and you're changing on it. So what is involved there behind the scenes when you're putting this stuff together?
It's a lot of talking. Like I was curious when you said I was one half of it. And I'm like, who's the other half in your mind? Is it just Daniel? Because I'm like, dude, there's a lot of people. I mean, it's me, it's Daniel, you know, it's Robert Kirkman, it's Sean Makowitz, who's the publisher of Skybound. And then obviously like Tom Riley, the artist on Duke. I mean, there's a lot of people that are involved in these conversations. And it's really just that. It's a lot of us just, you know, it's like the coolest job in the world. You get to hang out with your friends and talk about characters you like. I mean, like, what is, you know, well, better than that?
I would say, like, I think there's, you know, with characters like this, I feel like in the past, there are comics about them, and it feels like they're sort of just towing the line. But it feels like this Energon universe that you guys are launching is going hard in every direction. Like, it feels, it's more emotionally intense. It feels like the characters, the heroes are losing at the start. So like, how did you sort of get those bigger swings to be the launch point for these books?
I mean, I think for all of us, we were already kind of obsessed with these properties before we got the jobs, you know? Like, I mean, for me, it's like, I had been talking to Skybound about this book for years, like a long time ago. Like, I mean, I have a 4-year-old son who's like running around like a crazy person. And I was talking about this like long before he was born. Like, this is my third office since I started talking to them. So it's been like a while, right? And, you know, so for us, like with the idea of just going hard, I mean, it all starts with Skybound. Like, Skybound just had like a really good relationship with Hasbro. They said, like, we want to go hard. Like, we want to do really big ideas. And, you know, this is true when you come onto any property. It's like you want to go in it, you kind of have to take ownership a little bit. And when you're taking ownership of it, you have to be able to say, like, I'm going to do things that are going to make this mine, and the ability to kind of like, you know, you want to add. Like, I always love adding, right? So you want to add, you want to take things, you want to go bigger with it. And Skybound really approached it with like, we have a plan, like a big plan. You know, we're not going to treat this as like a throwaway thing. This is really important. And actually, even before I like officially started working on it, that was something I heard from Skybound a lot. This is really important to us. And that's not to say that the people that had the license before, it wasn't important, because you could see the body of work. It was clearly important to everybody, and everyone that's worked on it was a big fan of it. We just approached it with, like, you know, we all had a plan. And again, I was already obsessed with it. I had a notebook. I had a G.I. Joe notebook full of G.I. Joe ideas, like, a very long time ago. Was like, when I started hearing the stuff that Robert wanted to do, it was very much in line with stuff I had already been thinking about. Like, I had been thinking about, like, if I have an opportunity to relaunch G.I. Joe, this is what I would do. These are the things that I've been obsessed about. And I was like, parts of Cobra, parts of G.I. Joe that I was always curious about. And a lot of it really came down to the origins of it, right? And like, how do these things start? And the fact that that's where they were kind of coming from, you know? Like, I mean, really early on, one of the early meetings, Robert, he called it like Ultimate G.I. Joe. And that's how I was like, okay, I mean, clearly wrap my head around that, right? Like, I understand exactly what, when you say that, like, we all kind of know what that means. So it was like, okay, cool, we're approaching it from that level. And yeah, it's just a lot of talks, dude, like a lot of calls, a lot of meetings, but all of it is fun, man. Like, all of us just like throwing out ideas and being like, all right, I have this crazy thing. And then I tell them the crazy thing and they're like, oh, that's awesome. Now what about this crazy thing? So it's been really fun. It's funny with the G.I. Joe property, because I mean, from my side, it's all, I'm obsessed with G.I. Joe and like Daniel obsesses about the Transformers stuff. For years, I would hear that Robert loved Transformers, right? Like I've known this. This is like not a secret. Like Robert loved Transformers. And Sean Mackowitz loves G.I. Joe. And so I always thought that's how it was going to be. It was going to be like Robert and Daniel working on the Transformers side and me and Sean. But then once I started talking to Robert about it, I was like, oh, no. He's also obsessed about G.I. Joe. Yeah. He also has like a whole thing with that. Yeah, there was just a lot of
his
talks,
G.I. Joe
man.
Notebook is also thick, I think, at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, probably. I mean, he's been awesome, though. He's I don't know. He's been really great to work with. Everybody has been. Like, we've all been having a lot of fun.
Well, given that, given the obsession with G.I. Joe, why was Duke the right character to kick off a miniseries to introduce G.I. Joe to the world?
Because it's Duke, that's why.
Well, never mind. You don't need to answer. Pete,
do you know this?
One.
No, but you know that there's a joke answer that Robert hates that I say in public sometimes because I'm like, that's because Robert won it. No, so I come from G.I. Joe from a different angle, admittedly, right? Like, I came in from toys and cartoon, right? Like, my age, I'm because of where I, like, how old I am, I wasn't really coming into it from the comics side of things. Right. And Duke's popularity really began because of the cartoon, not because of the comics. And don't get me wrong, he became an important player in the comics, but he's not in the comics in the first like year and a half. Right. Like, he wasn't this like the guy we know now of like, oh, Duke is the leader of G.I. Joe. That wasn't in the very beginning for the really when the mythology starts to build, it wasn't with that. So over the years, I've heard this argument, and it's interesting because I still see it to this day. Where some people are like, yo, I love Duke. And some people are like, I hate Duke. Right? Like, there's just, it's interesting to watch. And then it's funny now that I've said that in interviews, I've seen people be like, man, what's he talking about? I love Duke. And some people just jump in with like, I hate him. You know? So it's like, when we were coming at it, I was like, well, you know, he's an interesting point of view character, right? Like, if we're starting at the beginning of the story, I think coming with somebody who is, for lack of a better phrase, a little bit of a blank slate, right? But we all know Duke. Like, Duke is like the perfect soldier, right? Then I was like, oh, well, let's take this character, show this new universe through his point of view, which is much more grounded, right? Because like Void Rivals is in space, Transformers, I mean, they're Transformers. Like, you know, but for him to come at it from a very grounded point of view, but then also to break him down and build him up and then show why he is cool and then also show how he becomes the leader of G.I. Joe. It was like all of these pieces. That's really what made the decision to make it him, you know? It was like, but also, and Robert said this from the very beginning, like, we want there to be a bit of it being unpredictable, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's why
so
we
he
don't.
Might, he, might trans- is, he might transform into a truck as well.
I mean, you don't know. We'll see what happens. but it's like, you know, you want to have these, it's like, it's like how Daniel, like, we're totally talking spoilers at this point. It's like how Daniel had Bumblebee get killed in the first issue of Transformers, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. It's stuff like that that you're like, oh, let's kind of surprise people, take some twists and turns. You know, we could have just started off with like, here's G.I. Joe number one, and just started there. But I knew where I wanted to start, where Robert wanted to start, where, you know, where Skybound was. We were like, no, let's start in a much more grounded, small place, and then get bigger from there and really start growing out this world and starting in, you know, this, I want to say a smaller place, but a more grounded, intimate place. And that's what I'm able to do with Duke, like focus in on this one person's story in the beginning and then gradually introduce more and more of this world all through his point of view. And it's been, yeah, it's really fun.
What's been really enjoyable along the lines of what you're saying is it really does feel like a bunch of people got together who love G.I. Joe and love Transformers and kind of locked themselves in a room and been like, okay, if we get to the keys to this, what are we going to do? And it just jumps off the page, the passion. The oh shit moments in this are glorious and well-earned. I'm really excited to kind of dive into it. And starting with Duke just kind of made sense to me because if you're going to start off with G.I. Joe, it's like, well, what's Duke doing? and is Duke in this world? Because there is different G.I. Joes where Duke isn't kind of the head. So I think kind of like establishing this all early makes so much sense. I'm just so excited to kind of read each new thing. And the fact that Cobra Commander is coming down the pipeline is also very exciting.
And that book is super weird. It's so different. I tell people this is a true story, and I tell it, listen, like, you know, I'm glad to hear you say that you like the oh shit moments, because like my goal is every issue to have an oh shit moment. Like I want a fist pumping, like hell yeah moment in every issue of this that I do. Like it's a priority for me when I do this. When I wrote Cobra Commander number one, I turned it in, you know, Skybound was like, we have a couple notes, and mostly it was like, let's expand these scenes out, which was one of the great parts about working with Skybound with this project was like, you know, looking at it and saying that this is good, but we have to extend out scenes, you know, like, so that means adding pages, which are like,
that you never get is like, hey, this is great.
More pages. No, but more pages. Like, listen, every writer, artist will be the opposite. Artists are like, no more pages, no more pages. But for writers, they're like, yes, more pages. And it's funny, Tom King and I the other day were talking about this. We were talking about page counts, and Tom's always like, more pages, more pages. And I'm always like, yes, more pages, but I don't want to kill the artist. Let's find a happy medium, whatever. Respect, yeah. So with Cobra Commander, when I turned in the script, I remember turning it in and being like, okay, this is the moment. This is the test. This is when I get the no. Like, this is when somebody comes in and is like, this is too much. You have to stop. Right?
You have to stop.
And I turned it in. I mean, listen, this happens every once in a while. Like, you'll turn a script in and somebody calls you and is like, you can't do any of this. Like, this does happen. and so I turned it in. And then you walk away. Like, that's how you do it sometimes. You got to be like, all right, cool. And I, as you are aware, I work on, like, way too many books. So sometimes I turn a script in, and I'm like, I'll think about that again next month. Got to work on this next one. Like, I got to go over here.
Yeah.
So when I turned it in, I was like, okay, any minute now, somebody from Skybound is going to call me, and they're going to be like, dude, you can't do any of this stuff. And then, because also Hasbro is going to look at it, right? And then Hasbro is the one, like, this is their baby. You know, like, we're babysitting their baby, right? So I'm waiting for them to come in and be like, you can't do this. And then Hasbro was like, no notes.
Wow. Really?
You got more pages and then no notes? That's like the
no notes. And so I was like, oh, dang, dude, this is wild. All right, this is fun. And then same thing with each issue. Like every issue, I'm like, okay, this crazy thing is going to happen. This is going to be this like, oh shit moment. And let's see what they do. And you know, they really trust us to really have fun with it. So Cobra Commander, it's very different people expect. It's definitely like a bit of a horror book. It's a little weird. It's very different than I think people are going to expect. But dude, it's really fun. I have this dope Cobra Commander toy on my desk right now. This one.
Oh,
I love this one. It's pretty dope. This came with the Hiss tank that they had, the HasLab thing. It's awesome. I have it over here. I have a lot of G.I. Joe toys.
Well, like, you have a lot of,
he watches me here with two.
Yeah. You have a lot of amazing things behind you. That nerd wall is epic. You said keep it on the comics.
I was going to say this to you. So two things with this room. This room is huge. My office is really big. Like I have like a lounge in here, and I have a bunch of other stuff. But there's so like this is the DC section, and I have like a Marvel section. Like I have all different stuff in here, and the G.I. Joe stuff is over here. But one of the things I was going to say to you guys, I love your guys' backgrounds because it's like, Alex's background is like, I like Batman. Pete's background is like, I like comic books. And Justin's background is like, I'm the adult.
I wish that was true. No, mine is I'm hiding from my children. a little bit adult, I guess.
I do want to mention about Cobra Commander. Schreckler here in the comments is commenting on, it's different from what you would expect. Is it a kissing book? And I know he's making a joke here. I will say, we got to look at Cobra Commander earlier today. Review thoughts are embargoed to a later date. But I will say, I agree. This is not what anybody is expecting for this book. I think is that
in an exciting way.
Yeah. I was curious if you had read it. Cause I don't know. I know they sent some copies out. So I'm always curious about who's read what, when I talk to people, you know? So that's, all right, cool.
Yeah. They told us to embargo review thoughts until later. But
okay, cool. All right, good to know. All right, yeah. I told you, it's
giving subtle thumbs up. On
yeah.
No, I mean, I think like it also fun. It has a different, it has a very different tone than Duke is the other part of it. Like, there's something that you're going through with Duke in terms of it's a conspiracy thriller series, or at least the first issue. That's very much what it was. Like you're saying, this is a horror book, but it's also, I think, something else as well. Again, I won't spoil anything, but. Cool well, I mean, differences.
They were built to be parallel stories. Like, it's about two people going through similar circumstances, and then they're reacting to those circumstances completely different because they're different characters. Like, Cobra Commander and Duke are two drastically different people. And when you look at both issue ones, they're both confronted with something, and they both have missions to go on, and they're going to handle it totally different. And that's a big piece of what we've been doing. And so, yeah, I'm excited to hear people think of it. You know, I don't know. It's been fun. I mean, that's one thing about, it's been nice for us because like this has been a secret for a very long time. Oh, wow. You know, it's like, this has been a secret for a long time. Like, I actually, so I'm still exclusive to DC Comics, but I was able to get permission to do this, and I had to get that permission a long time ago.
I was going to say, it must've been years and years ago.
Yeah. And so we were able to, you know, they've been working on this for a long time, and it was like, I always felt like it was one of comics' best secrets that Skybound was planning this and working on this, and it was going to happen. And then, you know, so when it finally got revealed they were doing this, and we privately were all like, this is dope. Like, I remember looking at stuff coming in and being like, this is amazing. Like, you see Daniel's pages, and you're just like, oh, this is this even real? Like, this is so cool, you know? And just knowing what everyone was doing, and like seeing the art, seeing the covers before anyone else, right? Like, just this private little group of people making comic books. And we were all so excited. And we hit that level where it's like, oh man, this, we're all just so pumped. And then when it got announced and books started coming out, and to see people are also as excited as it as we are, it has been awesome, but also like a relief. Like, just, you know, and it is the best feeling when you're like working really hard on something and you love it. And then you find out that people start loving it too. You're just like, oh man. You know, it's awesome. Like, I'm very thankful to everyone who's reached out to me and told me they like this stuff so far.
We got a question here from the comments. Easy Reader says, will there any other Skybound characters cross over, like from Firepower?
You know, I can't really speak to anything that's like Skybound specific plans, you know? I can't really talk about anything that's like a Skybound specific plan. I can mostly only talk about what's going on within the books. But you never know. You know,
well,
like, there's been
times
that they'll surprise me with stuff. So,
well, let me ask you about this then. I know you're also probably not going to tell us. You have two more miniseries that are coming out of the Energon universe. I know you're not going to tell us what those are. Probably.
Oh, yeah, I can't tell you what those are.
Do you know when we will know more about them, potentially?
What today? What day is today? No, I don't know for sure. I can't say. Yeah, I can't say. Dude, I don't know if you heard this before, but like for a really long time, even when the books were announced, I wasn't allowed to talk about anything happening in G.I. Joe. Like every interview I did about the stuff, so even when they announced everything and we were at San Diego, I was just sitting there and they were like, don't say anything. And I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, just say you're excited. And I was like, I can't talk about Duke. I can't talk about Cobra Commander. And they're like, you definitely can't talk about Cobra Commander. So, I mean, it's they're very protective of it, you know, like, and I appreciate that. Cause I do believe that like one of my favorite parts of comics is surprises.
Sure.
Like, I love surprises in comics, you know, and I think having surprises in comics can be hard to come by sometimes. So I understand why they're very protective of stuff like that. And so, yeah, I can't really reveal anything.
Especially when you kept a secret for years and years. So you're clearly our hardened.
Yeah, I had literally shielded. The day it was announced, I had multiple people who I talked to on an often basis. So like Scott Snyder, Tom King, people who I'm friends with were like, what?
Like, when how did you start you this? I'm like,
years ago. Years ago. Yeah, no, they were like, what? And then you find out all these people are love G.I. Joe and love Transformers that you didn't know, and they have all these opinions on it. I had creators being like, yo, I have a whole G.I. Joe pitch I gotta show you. Like, it was one of those things where it was like unleashed. But I didn't tell a soul because I really was like, no, we got to keep this. We got to keep this one tight and keep it secret. So I respect the fact that Skybound is really good about keeping secrets. Like, I love that about them.
Awesome. Cool. Well, listen, I know we got to let you go in a second. These books are so good. Well, one of them, the other one, review TBD.
Yeah, we haven't said anything.
We haven't said what it was audio wise or anything like that.
We haven't. Yes.
Visually, yes, we haven't given any. Visually, I don't know, but we haven't given.
We're not
any
embargoed from thumbs.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But I know you have a million other titles. We've been loving everything else you've been doing. Superman has been so good in particular, and can't wait to see what's coming up in that. But what else do you want to plug, if anything? Is there anything else people should be checking out?
I mean, you know, I still have a book called Dark Ride of Skybound. You know, it's a horror book, you know, that is still coming out. We're going to be wrapping it up soon. So I'm working on the end of that right now. But yeah, I mean, in the DC stuff, you know, I still love writing Green Arrow, Superman, and Batman and Robin. Like, I write a lot of books right now, but I'm actually really happy with everything I'm doing. So I hope people will check them out. And, you know, I'm just glad you are liking the books, you know, and anyone that's watching, thank you so much for supporting the books and for buying them.
Awesome.
I just have one question about Dark Ride. I was a huge Birthright fan.
Yeah.
And I feel like that had like, it was like the story and then the twist. And it feels like Dark Ride, you're like, like twists in the last one. Buckle up. I'm doing exclusively twists. And now you're working on the end. Is that the intention? And how many more twists do you have coming for us?
I have a few more twists. It's funny, like when I was doing Birthright, that was, you know, it was much more about family and about like, you know, how your life can change on you unexpectedly. But it was very much fantasy and family merged together. But when I was doing Nailbiter was always like grindhouse craziness. And Mike and I were obsessed with cliffhangers, right? Like, we were just obsessed with cliffhangers and doing crazy shit. And so when I started doing Dark Ride, I kind of merged those two things together a bit, where it's like, this is a book about family, but it's also this like screwed up family, you know? Mm-hmm. It's about screwed up family. It's about horror. It's about what even is scary today. It's about the amusement park. But then also it's me just being like, how can I surprise people? How can I make twists? How can I throw curveballs? And so it's actually it's probably the hardest book I write is Dark Ride right now. It's the same with Birthright. I think I told you before, with Birthright, I would take forever to write the scripts. It's the same way with Dark Ride. It's the hardest book for me to write because I feel very passionate about it. And like, it's very personal to me. And so I spent a lot of time putting work into that. So yeah, I hope people check out. I mean, it's like, you know, with DC, I love everything I'm doing there, and I'm really happy with it. But yeah, I hope people check out more Dark Ride and check out the trades that are out right now.
I love it. I mean, my pitch that I'll throw to you, which I know you have no control over, but every issue, I think, guys, I've said when we've reviewed this book, it should be a horror house at Universal Horror Nights. Like that, I would love to just walk through a Dark Ride house. That would be so much fun.
Yes. I think about this a lot because I, as you know, like I'm obsessed with that stuff. I love that stuff. So I'm like, that would be like the dream. I was really jealous that in Australia, at the Universal Studios in Australia for Hollywood Horror Nights, they built a deceased maze for DC.
Oh, did they really? That's so cool. Awesome.
Yeah. And they built a deceased maze and they had the comic book pages all blown up and stuff. And Tom Taylor, if you check out Instagram, Tom Taylor did a whole thing when he went to go visit it, and it was awesome. And I was super jealous of that. I was like, that is the raddest thing. Yes. You know, at 1 year, I'll leave you on this, that 1 year at San Diego Comic-Con, they built a maze dedicated to a Court of Owls outside of San Diego Comic-Con. Did you know about this?
Right. Yes. No. Yes. I remember that.
Dude, and they built the whole, like, there's that scene at the beginning of Scott and Greg's run where he goes around the fountain and stuff. Like, that was built. They built it. You had to walk around it. And there were people in suits wearing the mask coming out to scare you.
Oh, my God.
For us, we were like, this is amazing. But I remember telling Scott about it, and he didn't know about it. And then watching him come out of it, and he's like, that is the most surreal thing. Like, they built something that was like a thing I had to walk through that him and Greg built, and he was like, that was super surreal and weird, but it was just an amazing experience. Like, he was like, I want to go through it again just to like look at stuff, you know, not a haunted house. But I think at some point in my life I'm gonna end up building some kind of Dark Ride. I feel like that's my destiny. At some point I'm gonna have to do something.
Just like, make a deal with the devil. It's fine. It's no big deal.
Yeah, it'll be fine. I was every time I go through Mr. Toad's Wild Ride at Disneyland, I think about how I'm like, Well, this is just flat. Like, it's all flat art. It's not, not all of it is, but it's not animatronics. It's mostly just flat art. It's one of the few rides left that's like that. And I'm like, you could build this.
It's basically a comic.
It's pretty fun, except for when you go into hell in the ride. When you go to hell in the ride, there's a big dragon and there's animatronics in that. But anyway, yeah. So Dark Ride,
buy Dark Ride. Kids ride.
Awesome. Josh, thank you so much for coming on. Great chatting with you.
Thank you guys
as
so much. Yeah, thank you. I got to get back to work.
It's a pleasure.
All right.
I will, good luck with the show and everything. Thanks, guys.
Right. Thank you.
All right. There we go. Once again, that's Joshua Williamson. You can check out Duke number 2 is hitting January 31st. Cobra Commander number 1, which we have no opinion on, is January 17th.
Not yet.
Opinion coming later. In the meantime, we have an opinion, a good opinion, of this next creator that we're going to be talking to and his amazing book. He is the guy behind Death Strikes, the Emperor of Atlantis, Dave Moss. Dave, welcome to the show. Hello. Hey.
Hello.
Thank you for coming on. Thank you for your patience in waiting. I'm very excited to talk about this book. This is a fascinating project. It's a fascinating graphic novel. I'm going to get some of the continuity wrong, but let me throw it out there that you tell me what I missed. But basically, back around 1943-ish, I believe, there were two guys living in a concentration camp / ghetto called Terezin. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Terezin.
Czechoslovakia. And this was essentially a terrible way of saying it, but a promotional concentration camp where they're like, hey, everything's actually fine. People are allowed to make art. These two guys made a bunch of art, including pieces of an opera that was frequently revised, and then they died. However, you have taken a lot of that material and formed it together into a graphic novel. What did I miss, Dave? And how did you end up putting together this project?
How did you get to this point?
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, you got it pretty well. Okay. Yeah. So I would say about maybe like 20 years or so ago, long before people were using the internet and you had to learn about stuff by going to big box stores at the mall, I was wandering around at Best Buy in Phoenix, Arizona, technically Paradise Valley, Arizona. And this collection, or it was actually the sampler of music that had been suppressed by the Nazis, just jumped off the shelf at me. It had this cover that was designed by Art Spiegelman. I was just this mall punk into, you know, Offspring and Pennywise and stuff like that. And I had no idea that there were these other genres of music that were just rebellious. Took it home, became obsessed with it, and particularly this one opera called Der Kaiser von Atlantis by Victor Ullmann and Peter Keen. That is just the wildest, most modern, dark, but like also comedic thing that you've ever like seen or listened to. On its own, it was just incredible. But then you learn this backstory about how this was just a big, you know, punch in the nuts to the Nazis at the time, that this was the last act of rebellion by these two creators. And you know, this has just stuck with me. I think the first time I mentioned I wanted to make a graphic novel out of this may have been maybe about 2001. And so this has been, you know, a couple of decade process trying to make this happen and turn it into something, which I can show you the hard copy, which I don't think you've seen before, but here it is here. Ooh. It's a beautiful little object.
Wow, look at that.
I think there are only three of these around, although I did get a notice from FedEx that there is a Moss from Dark Horse arriving in the mail tomorrow.
That's so exciting.
Well, today, and then we could, you know, open it together.
An unboxing video.
You know what? Bring it up with FedEx. You know, they're not.
I'll talk to them. We talk to them all the time on this show. I do want to take like a little step back before we get into the book, because I don't think it's a direct line between finding an album in Best Buy and saying this needs to be a graphic novel. Why was that the thought that occurred to you? Why was the graphic novel, the format, the right way of translating this?
So a couple of things. And it's hard to talk about without getting into the plot a little bit. So maybe I can talk a little bit about that first.
Sure.
So this is a dystopian satire that imagines a world, an alternative universe where Atlantis never sank and instead became this huge warring superpower controlled by this evil dictator who's obsessed with technology named Emperor Overall. And one day, Emperor Overall, having conquered the rest of the world, decides, hey, I'm out of people to conquer. Let's just declare all-out war, everybody against everybody. And the Grim Reaper himself, Death, is sitting in the wings, hears that. He's already exhausted from having to deal with tanks and missiles and bombs and machine guns anyways. And he hears this thing about everybody having to fight everybody else, and he decides to go on strike. And he goes on strike, creating this hellscape of the living dead. And that's kind of where the story takes off. So you hear operas, you think like, you know, Viking helmets and braids, you think convoluted stories with 5-hour romances. What you don't think about is this dystopian fantasy. Somehow there's like Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman elements in there. There's you know, zombie stuff going on. Like, how did this become an opera? And, you know, 20 years ago, I'm thinking about this. I mean, I don't have like the wherewithal to go and produce, you know, like a 10-part series. I know we were talking about, you know, Robert Kirkman in the previous group. I'm not him, and neither was he 20 years ago. But graphic novel is a medium that really works in terms of being able to take something very imaginative that would take a ton of special effects to produce in a, you know, cast of thousands or whatever, and actually, you know, adapt it. But one of the reasons that it works so well is that it turns out that the poet who wrote it, Peter Keane, actually was an illustrator on top of being a writer. So he's drawing all these things. He's writing all these things. And we actually found a comic that he drew about the production of this opera, illustrating how frustrated he was with all of the edits it went through. And you'll actually find that comic in the back of the book. And so I think why it works so well is naturally is because we're dealing with source material that is based on somebody who has those sensibilities already.
Has this opera ever... Has this opera ever been men-mounted? Like, is there a performance that has ever happened?
So the opera kind of disappeared from about 1943 to the mid-1970s. There was somebody who rescued it, who kept it in his attic or something. It's really unclear why he never handed it to anybody else until the 70s. But the guy who rescued it, who had also been in the concentration camp, passed it over and found this British conductor, composer, to piece it together and try to make an opera out of it. And so the first time it was staged was in the 1970s. The BBC made a very, I would say, somewhat campy adaptation of it. They ran on television. You can't find it anywhere. I went to a library to see it in Basel, Switzerland. But it is usually produced maybe like once a year. There'll be some place, you know, some company will stage it. And so if you're lucky enough, you'll be in that city at that time and your night will be free and you'll get to go see this brief little opera. I saw it in the early 2000s at Arizona State University when they produced it. There are some versions of it on YouTube. But, you know, in the end, it's like a great story. But unless you're versed in the medium of opera or can appreciate German, you're not necessarily going to get the full, like, you know, it's not going to resonate with you as strongly. So taking it to this other medium is going to give it a wider audience and take this story and help people connect with it a lot differently.
Well, one thing, and I haven't seen the other version, so I don't know if this is true, but I was really struck by when I was reading through it is... Like you're saying, it does have this very Terry Pratchett, Terry Gilliam, all the Terrys type tone to it. Every it's Terry. Very satirical. I was super surprised to learn in the back matter that you have this emperor character, but it's not supposed to be Hitler. And the situation, obviously, it was before they really knew the full scope of what was going on in the concentration camp, so they're not dealing with that. But it does feel like either through the script or the art or the coordination there, that you make that a little more blatant, because from the first couple of pages, you have this very cabaret style character wandering through the streets as there's piles of bodies there against the wall of what clearly looks like a concentration camp, more like an Auschwitz perhaps than a Terezin or something like that. Correct me if I'm wrong about it, first of all, but what led to that choice, if that is what you were going for?
Well, what we were actually going for, so everything that you see in the book is taken from some sort of artifact or architecture or some sort of drawing. Like, we went out to Czech Republic, we photographed everything, we visited all the museums, we met with all sorts of experts, and we grabbed, you know, we were able to find artwork by Peter Keane. And so we were very careful about making sure that the book and the artwork of the book reflected real places, real locations. And so when you look at Terezin, when you look in the first few pages, you see this very angular, huge walls sort of, you know, place. And that's what Terezin looked like this ghetto concentration camp. They actually took this fortress town. The Nazis took this fortress town that existed for more than 100 years before they came in and invaded Czech Republic. And so we took that, we built it out a little bit more, we added some more details to it, but everything in there is based on something we actually saw. Emperor Overall has this tower. We were looking for like, what should this tower look like? How are we going to invent this tower? And we did look at these Nazi flak towers, as they're called. So Hitler had built these really ugly towers, as battle armament. And so we used that as the structure to build, where this emperor lives. So what it reflects is us grabbing, if it connects to Hitler and the Nazis, it's because we grabbed architecture and historical artifacts from the time. But you're right, those guys who were in Terezin, they knew the Nazis were terrible. They did not know the full plan of the Third Reich. In fact, nobody knew what the full plan was of the Third Reich until the Nuremberg trials and all the stuff, all the pieces started coming together about how horrible the Holocaust was.
Yeah. And I don't say this dismissively at all, but there's nothing really subtle about the satire they're doing there. Was the point when they were doing this, was it to really rail on the Nazis and put it out there? Or were they hoping that they wouldn't get the very light subtext that's under the
text? I think these two guys were just fearless and uncompromising, and they wanted to see what they could get away with. So there are various versions that survived the Holocaust. In fact, there's three that we were able to look at. One was a handwritten libretto. One was the handwritten score. And then there's this typed version. And the typed version is very clearly the one that went through the camp censors, where somebody looked at it and said, "This
so
is
so interesting.
Yeah, this is too close to Hitler. We're going to change it from emperor to the king. We don't like that you have these rebels, so we're going to change them to bandits. We don't want, they made all these things and really dulled it down quite a lot. And so it's interesting to be able to see the progression of the text. So, I do think that, they weren't pulling any punches when it came to the Nazis, but they weren't pulling any punches with the irreverence for the situation that they were in. They, they were facing death every day and they were like, we're going to make humor out of this. And I have a feeling that it was even probably a little bit much for other people in the camp to look at, because it really, it's very darkly comedic in a way that kind of makes you uncomfortable sometimes.
I do think that's, though, a little bit, not to speak out of turn, but a little bit part of Jewish humor in a certain way. Like, I don't think it necessarily goes as far into that, but I assume you're probably familiar with the stories of Chelm. I don't know if other people listening to the podcast necessarily are, but it's basically a town full of stupid people. And that's the whole joke. And it's just all these fables type stories about the ridiculous things they do. But it comes out of darkness. Same thing with like the stories of the golem and other things. So I do think that is a very deep down Jewish humor thing to push against these things harder and embrace the darkness and push farther against them.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we were trying to go for in it. So I'm glad if you picked up on that in our book.
I have a question about the censor. It's so interesting, the idea that they were censoring it, but they still were like, but this is good. We just wanted to have a couple notes. It's very funny / strange to me. Did anything from that censored script influence your writing of your making of the book over the course of it?
Not particularly. And I should note that it's unclear how the censorship worked. So, keep in mind that the way the Nazis structured this camp is that they set up this kind of self-government, as they called it, where there were this council of Jewish elders who were in charge of administrating a lot of stuff. But these Jews were basically charged with enforcing Nazi edicts, or everybody would be punished. And so probably what happened is that this document, the script, had to go in front of other, Jewish officials who were looking at this and being like, well, what's going to happen if we don't censor this? Are, Nazis going to come in with clubs and beat us all? So they came in and they were like, let's just try to get this as, as bare minimum as possible, where we can keep the script. No, we didn't keep any of that. I was really looking for what was the original intent. And so we went really back to the score and the original handwritten libretto itself. We were working off those to really, you know, get to the core and to you, when you open the book, you're going to find in this back this comic at where it shows, you know, the author Peter Keane has this version of death, of what he thought death should look like, and it illustrates this is death, this imposing, you know, scary figure. And then over the course of six panels, the composer comes in and trims a little bit of the robe. The conductor comes in and adjusts the hat. Censor comes in and knocks off the hat. Then eventually, like, by the end, he has just sort of illustrated that this version looks like a ballerina at the point that death is no longer a scary figure. And we're like, we want to get back to that scary figure. We want to be very conscious that if there was a seventh panel that illustrated our graphic novel, we wanted that seventh panel to look more like the beginning. Like we were returning it back to, you know, giving it the teeth and the bite and the criticism that that was originally intended.
Now, I'm going to be, I think this question is going to be teeing you up a little bit for something that you talk about in the back matter. I don't know if you've seen Zone of Interest yet, the movie that's out, where, for anybody who doesn't know, this also deals with Holocaust and World War II. It's set at Auschwitz instead of Terezin, but it's about the head of Auschwitz who lived with his family right outside of the concentration camp. Without getting too much into that movie, there is a very important moment that happens in there about people creating art in the middle of Auschwitz. Tying it into this, I'm wondering why you think this is bubbling up now. And part of it might just be coincidence that you have your graphic novel, Zone of Interest is out, and it's part of the conversation. But why do you think it is that folks in the modern era in 2024 are so focused on talking about this art that came out of this very dark period of human history?
I mean, I'm not really sure. I mean, we're about 80 years out, right? So we're hitting some major anniversaries and we're now losing all of the living memory of it. There's you know, only a handful of survivors left from Terezin, only a handful left from Auschwitz, and in another 5 to 10 years, there won't be anyone. And so there is a bit of a push right now to make sure that things are preserved. And there are, you know, various polls and surveys that are done by Pew and anybody else that is starting to show that, you know, youth have no idea about the Holocaust. They have no idea what World War II was like. And that's starting to scare people, and that we're losing this, you know, memory as a culture. And so I think that might be pushing it a little bit. I don't know if that's really necessarily why this book is out there. I mean, I was looking towards the anniversary of the book, but you know, this is, if I could have put this out 10 years ago, I would have put it out 10 years ago. You know, you just have to look at where you are in your career and when you're able to get it all together. So,
yeah. What else, if anything, do you want to say about this book? I know we've covered a bunch of things here, but is there anything people should be paying attention to when they read it, things that might be under the radar that they might not catch up on that you think are important to point out?
Yeah. Well, one thing I like to just sort of emphasize to people, because when we're talking about, you know, a book like this and you start talking about the Holocaust, people go to a certain place and they start thinking about Mouse and they start thinking about The Diary of Anne Frank. And I just want to, I don't want people to get in that headspace and think that this is like a Mouse book. Like, this is going to be a closer to like a Neil Gaiman kind of book than it is going to be an Art Spiegelman Mouse kind of book. And, you know, Karen Berger was our editor on this and it's coming under her imprint. And so hopefully that this is not a, you know, a Pantheon book or anything like that. This is very much a comic that if you like comics and not necessarily nonfiction comics, you're going to be into this. It's literary, but It is fantastical. But as you're going through it, like, this is designed for you to be able to read it multiple times. I think it probably only takes like 45 minutes to an hour to get through it through the first time, but you're going to miss so much on that. When you start looking at the background of the panels, you start seeing the details. Each one has some sort of meaning and connection to something in history. And I think that's, I hope when people read it though, that they lose for a moment as they're going through it, the backstory of it, and they actually get lost in the story itself.
Yeah.
And then when they think about where it came from, it gives them that sort of added punch of depth, because our source material was so strong that it should work on its own as a narrative. It should work on its own as a story. And you shouldn't have to be like, well, you know, Holocaust, you know, concentration camps, and you'd be like, no, there's a story here that you can, you know, a world that you can enter and feel like you're a part of.
Yeah. That's well, great. I, having read it, I definitely think it works on that level. It is, it feels a weird thing to say with a Holocaust book, but it's a fun book to read, you know.
Yeah. But the context adds much, so much after you've read it as well. Like, and over the course of it.
And that's why we didn't put up an essay up front of the book. Yeah, like, I mean, exactly. you get to the essay in the back, and that's, we didn't want to over, we had to give you some background at the beginning, but we didn't want to overload you with academic stuff until you got to the back.
Yeah. Well, great book, Dave. Absolutely love it. Congratulations on it.
Congrats.
And good luck. I'm looking forward to the rest of the world checking it out.
Thanks. If I may say one more thing, if you are please. In the Southern California area, we'll be doing an event at Warwick's on February 1st in San Diego, California, or La Jolla. Oh, nice. La Jolla is part of San Diego, but they feel like they're different. and then if you're in the Los Angeles area on February 4th, we'll be doing an actual formal book launch at the Holocaust Museum Los Angeles.
Oh, awesome.
Great.
Very cool. Dave, thank you so much again for coming on. Have a lovely night.
Thank you for having us.
Great book.
All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Death Strikes, The Emperor of Atlantis. It's out from Dark Horse Comics on January 24th from Berger Books. As mentioned, Karen Berger, legendary of Vertigo. Yeah. So definitely check it out. It is great stuff. And folks, we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It's your audience questions.
Yeah.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question on Facebook, YouTube, or X/Twitter or Twitch. One of those, not Instagram. They haven't figured that out yet.
Oh, not the gram.
Not the gram. Actually, we do have people chatting on the gram, but it's a little harder for me to like go back
to get in that.
Get in that.
Oral hands. Is
get
that
in that.
Is?
That's all right, but I'll check out the gram, see if there's anything popping.
Okay, sweet. Meanwhile, what are you guys drinking? I am still drinking this Yo Joe, which is very delicious.
Oh, it's Yo just... Joe, what a great name. Mm-hmm.
By the way, Limoncello, that's one of the Joes, right, Pete?
Limoncello?
Yeah. No. Yeah, Limoncello.
Limoncello is the Italian Joe, right? Who came
knock,
in
knock, who's that?
Duke, what got a bigger the pizza?
Knock, knock, who's there? Landshark.
Landshark? Okay. Justin, what are you drinking tonight?
I made myself a Negroni with a habanero-infused Aperol that I made the other night. And man, it is good.
Who are you?
I'm a fancy man at home. I'm a fancy man at home is what I am.
Well, congratulations.
We got a question here from Easy Reader. Have any of you watched Echo yet?
No, I should be doing that right now, but
it's not on.
It's not on until 9 p.m. It's not even 8 p.m. yet.
6 p.m.
No, 6 p.m. PT. It's 9 p.m. ET.
PT, that's your time zone. PT.
Your personal time zone. PT stands for personal time zone. I have seen the first three episodes. I know Pete's not going to want to hear my opinion. Do you want to take off your headphones, Pete?
No, don't say anything, you fuck.
I'm going to say something.
All right, fine.
Yeah. Not great. I think it's the action. People are going to really like that because it's like very reminiscent of the Marvel Netflix shows. Alacwa Cox, great as the lead. The rest of the cast is really good, but you can feel the choppiness from the editing, which is something that you should never feel when you're watching a TV show. There were a lot of rumors that it was 8 episodes down to 5, but whether that's true or not, you can feel that. Like the first episode, spoilers, I guess, but it's legit like a clips reel for Hawkeye for most of the running time, which is insane.
Well, so yeah, I think it's heavily re-edited. That tracks with that. But I feel like they changed the tone of it from like perhaps a more Hawkeye tone to this harsher Marvel spotlight or MCU spotlight.
It's a bummer because I think a lot of the pieces are there, and the idea of having indigenous voices in there, putting hearing impaired people to the front, all of that, it's very well intentioned. It's good, but it just, again, based on 3 episodes, it doesn't quite come together, which is a bummer, but I'm going to watch the last 2. Pete, you can put back on your headphones. There we go.
Yeah,
I'm sick to watch it either way.
Yeah, you haven't seen the whole fucking thing. No one wants to hear your opinion yet.
I mean, clearly at least one person did. So there you go.
He doesn't want to hear the opinion. In fact, he doesn't. He didn't do it.
Yeah. Edward Doherty says, which comic characters remind you most of Nat Townsend?
Oh, that's a great question.
Nat Townsend, of course.
Kind of like the question a little bit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
The Riddler?
Yeah,
yeah. He's like that annoying background guy that's not quite the main villain, but he's kind of keeps popping in every once in a while. You know what I mean?
You mean the Riddler from like Batman 66, who's like spinning his staff and cackling the whole time?
Yeah, yeah. He puts flair on it. You know what I mean?
He's like the third member of the Royal Flush Gang.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. These are some of the heaviest roasts we've had on this show in quite some time. And he's not even here to defend himself.
Yeah. Oh, he's here.
Stray Bullet said, what is Justin's shirt? I think I know it, but it's like a vague memory.
Great call. Black Gold, a coffee shop and record store over on Court Street in Carroll Gardens area of Brooklyn.
Glad it said record store as well.
Speaking of record stores, Scheuchler says, what are your favorite comic book themed albums, or what comic book should have an album made? I don't know if this is specifically comic book themed, and I don't have it yet, but they put on pre-sale the Scott Pilgrim Takes Off vinyl album of the soundtrack, and it comes with a bunch of memorabilia, including, slight spoiler for the show, but a playbill for Matthew Patel's show. And I was like,
click. Yes. I'll take one.
Take my money now, please. Thank you.
I mean, Scott Pilgrim, the animated show or the book, is a great idea for a themed album.
The movie soundtrack, also great.
I feel like I'm trying to think. Pete, what do you think? Mouse Guard? I'm thinking in the epic fantasy, Led Zeppelin.
Well, that makes me think of Murder Falcon. Murder Falcon.
Oh, Murder Falcon album would be good.
Oh, yeah, that would be unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Play along
situation. We got one more here from Edward Doherty. Have you seen on Twitter people comparing traditional flat colors with modern colors? What are your thoughts? And color is spelt with a U. I have not seen this conversation at all. That's an interesting one, though. What do you guys think about that? Flat colors versus modern colors?
Well, I think, I mean, I also haven't seen this, but I would imagine, I mean, the color palette and the digital color palette is so different than the three color funnies, as they were known back in the day.
Four color, right?
Or four color, I guess. Yeah. Well, maybe three color before that, before they got to the fourth.
Two colors first.
Then it was
one color harder.
Just black. Harder. Originally, it was just like a wash of black on a page. No, like, no images.
Figure this out, true believers.
He'd come to your house because you also couldn't read the words. He'd be like, I'm in your house. I'm Stan Lee. I think there's a place for both of them, right? Like, I'm thinking specifically of Birds of Prey, which obviously...
I mentioned the same thing, which is... Yeah.
Yeah, it uses modern coloring techniques, but with a tone of the traditional flat colors. And I think... there's an appeal for both of them. I don't know. It depends on what you're doing.
It's more opportunity to match the work you're doing to the type of story you're telling. Like Birds of Prey, I think, is such a strong artistic choice that we love. But other more like modern looks, I think, have sort of that, there's more of a grayscale, more of a like palette to it throughout.
Yeah, grayscale. The black and white comics. That's where the real story is. You know what I mean?
What? You only like two colors. It's simpler.
Yeah,
I like, are you colorblind, Pete?
And at least one black of them isn't even color, technically.
Yes.
You are colorblind.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Frederico Rosa, what it says, what is your favorite mythology adaptation in comics? Mythology adaptation?
Fables.
Oh, Incredible Hercules.
Yeah, Hercules is great.
That's not a adaptation. That's a stretch of an adaptation. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't remember what the specific content was, but I used to love the actual original Classics Illustrateds back in the day. My dad had a box of them from when he was a kid, and they lived at my grandmother's house at every single family holiday. I would just sit there, I'd read through all the Classics Illustrated, read through all of his Mad magazines. That was the best.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have two answers for this. The Wonder Woman, when we get into the real, like the George Perez, the famed George Perez run, I think is very mythologically based. That's very cool.
Cliff Chang's run also.
Cliff Chang also had a lot of that, more modernized, but definitely bringing those characters forward. But I'll throw out that maybe the most adapted version would be the Peter David Incredible Hulk pantheon, which brought those characters in a somewhat nonsensical way to the modern world as Hulk's buddies.
All right. I think we got one last question here. Actually, this is from Edward again. I have a 16-month-old. What is the very first comic you gave your children? Very first comic I gave my children.
Well, I can say the first comic that I gave my niece is we went to the comic book store and she picked out a Gwenpool comic that I was crazy disappointed in. But she read the crap out of it, so I was happy. But I was like, you sure you don't? There are all these other great characters.
Oh, man. What a bummer. Story.
Yeah. Also, that's a pretty extreme character. Deep continuity to really present to a child. Wonder Woman, again, we have a more of a kid's book, less comic, that is like Batgirl, Wonder Woman, Bumblebee, a lot of the female DC superheroes, like just being powerful. And so that got my kids into Wonder Woman. And then we've gone to the comic store and picked up some other Wonder Woman comics.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I don't remember what was the first one. I know.
While you're thinking, can I just follow up with Justin real quick?
Yeah, sure.
Justin, did you take him to a comic/bagel shop, or which comic book shop did you go to?
/bagel shop.
No, I'm making fun of your coffee
Hey, I don't know this business. It's just the way they do it. It's nice. Get people into the coffee and sell them some records. Great business model. This place has been open for like a decade in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn.
That's great. Enough with the commercial. Answer my fucking question.
But yes, no, I did go to a look. There they are dressed as Wonder Women. I handmade those costumes last year.
I remember
year.
The first one. It was Small Favors was the first book.
Of course it was.
What was the comic shop, though? What shop did you take them to?
Are you trying to bust me?
What are you doing? What is this?
There's this comic book store in Crown Heights that I believe is called Nowhere Comics. That is
Anyone
great.
Comics.
Anyone, that's what it is.
Yeah,
and they just move locations.
They're keeping you guessing.
They're keeping you guessing. And Pete, you're gonna keep us guessing with the next section, which is trivia. And
well, before I got to trivia. I was, I don't know if you remember or not, but I was going through all my comics and I found Todd McFarlane sent me something that I found in my old comics that I was going through these boxes. What's crazy is you can't tell, but I'm taking boxes off the shelf and I'm reorganizing, alphabetizing everything. It's an absolute nightmare. Do you know, I've pulled off maybe like 10 boxes off these shelves. So far, two out of 10, I have two full boxes of just Wolverine comics. Like, I couldn't believe all the damn Wolverine comics.
Why are you mad?
I'm not mad. I just couldn't. I can't believe it. So
that
anyways,
tracks so intense.
That is the most thing that I could ever believe in my entire life.
I believe more in that than my family and always have.
All right, so I wrote into Spawn Comics, Spawn the Dark Ages, a fan letter. And
what
then
year
I got,
is this? What year is this?
Okay, so I moved to New York City in 99. This is either like 00 or 01.
You're writing into Spawn.
I was writing into Spawn, and then I got this letter in the mail from Todd McFarlane Productions, 123rd Street, baby. That's where I used to live.
Wow. People are going to visit that address, Pete. You know that, right? To be like, that's Pete's ancestral homestead.
Should. Go see the bodega on the corner. Tell them Pete sent you.
I bet they still remember you.
Wait, what did you order? Like, what was your go-to order at the bodega on the corner?
Chopped cheese, laid out flat, no bun, macaroni salad on top. Called it an improvised garbage plate.
That's not my chopped cheese order, but chopped cheese was my go-to. But in the morning, the breakfast sandwich was ham, egg, and cheese, hot sauce,
wow. Plenty. Ham, egg, and cheese, the least ordered amongst New Yorkers, I would argue. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So I got this. This came in there. And then
ooh, so it's signed, for anybody listening, it's a baseball signed by Todd McFarlane.
Not a baseball. It's a postcard about a plug for the McFarlane collection.
Right. But didn't he he famously collected baseballs or something like that?
And he collected all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. And then I got this letter that was signed from Susie Thomas, Todd McFarlane Productions.
That's the end of the letter. Start at the beginning of the letter.
No, I know. But I said that's who it was signed by.
That's fine. That's still the end. Start at the beginning.
All right, here we go. Oh, here's the date right here. May 16, 2000.
Wow.
Dear Pete, thank you for your great letter. I want to let you know that your letter was selected for the upcoming issue of Spawn the Dark Ages number 15, which will ship in late May. Todd will personally respond to it. That never happened. I have enclosed an autographed card from the McFarlane collection. If you have access to the internet, check out our website, spawn.com.
Wait, is your letter in the back of that book?
Yeah.
Well, where's the, can you read the letter?
Oh, man. I got to find, I don't know where my Spawn comics are.
That's very funny that you're like, you read us the response, like corporate response.
No, your letter, find your letter. We'll find it. I do want to mention.
To be continued then. I'll find the letter.
On that day, May 16th, 2000, famous deaths, Bodacious the Bull, a rodeo bull, died.
Famous deaths.
That's the first thing you were Googling?
I Googled things that happened on May 16th, 2000, because I was curious. Very cool. We'll have a follow-up where Pete will eventually find the letter he wrote to Spawn. In the meantime, I do want to mention another podcast. We have another podcast we're doing a little exchange for on this show. On this episode of Comic Book Club, we're excited to feature a really funny podcast, perfect for anyone who hates censorship. It's called Band Camp. The hilarious duo of Jennifer Dadd hosts it. Band Camp is a comedy podcast where they read banned books and try to figure out why they were banned in the first place. This season, they're reading Mark Twain's classic, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn.
I'll tell you why that was banned.
I know some reasons.
Yeah, I have some reasons as well. I also know why Mr. Hamburger, my English teacher, got very mad at me for my feedback on that book. None of this is in the script they sent us.
Said Mr. Hamburger?
Mr. Hamburger. Not made up. Not actually a hamburger man.
I have some questions after the ad.
Okay.
Did he say things like robble, robble?
He did say robble, robble a lot. You know what I realized the other day? It took me many decades to realize that the Hamburglar said robble, robble because he's robbing hamburgers.
Is that true?
I think so.
I don't know if that's necessarily true.
That's true. Your logic. I think it's you're like, oh, I know why he says that.
Why else would they say robble, robble?
But why robble?
I'm going to robble, robble you.
It's like a cute way of sticking someone.
Well, this is the other night I was getting mugged. I was coming home late and somebody was mugging me and they were like, robble, robble. And I was like, I get it. Thank you.
Oh, nice. And that was your former teacher, Mr.
Hamburger. Mr. Hamburger. He's hit on hard times. Anyway, back to this ad. One chapter at a time out loud. If you think banning books will lead to a not-so-great future, then Band Camp is for you. Whether you're like Jennifer, curious to read the book for the first time, or like Dan and a little too lazy to read it yourself, you'll love Band Camp. Look for Band Camp. That's banned with two N's on your favorite podcast player and subscribe today. Let's get banned together.
Aw, isn't that nice?
Nice. I love it.
Great. Well, did you have questions about Mr. Hamburger?
Was he just made fun of constantly?
Strangely not, which was weird. Wow. But I will tell you the story about Huckleberry Finn real quick, if you're curious.
Let me just say, your teacher, Mr. Hamburger, my English teacher, was named Mr. Shart.
Wow. That's way worse.
Yes, correct.
The quick story about Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, if anybody doesn't know, it is about Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, and a guy named Joe that I won't elaborate on, traveling down the river on a raft together. And as
Was it Jim?
Yeah,
Jim.
Wasn't it?
Jim. Yes, there you go. It's been a while since
I won't elaborate on the first part of it.
Yes, thank you. Anyway, as they stop off at different places, pretty much every place, if I remember correctly, is kind of a parody of a Shakespeare play. And they stop off at one place where there's these two warring families. They get caught in the middle. There's a girl that's in love with a guy from one of the other families. And everybody dies except for them. And there's a very funny scene at the end where they're like, well, now we're both alive and we can be together. And I was like, oh, that's a, when we were talking about it in class, Mr. Hamburger asked, oh, what is this about, this section of the book? And I was like, well, you know, it's a parody on Romeo and Juliet. He's like, not quite. Ooh. I was like, no, I think it's Romeo and Juliet. He's like, no, actually, it's the Hatfields and the McCoys. And I was like, yes, it's that, but also it's very clearly, and he got so mad at me, and I think I got thrown out of class. Nice. But anyway, there you go.
He was like, get out of here, you future podcaster.
You're going to be a loser who talks about comic books until you die.
Glavin, technically, yes, you are correct, but also I am correct.
Oh, sorry. Was that the guy who wrote a letter into Medieval Spawn or whatever it was?
Yo, taking shots, Pete LePage, Mr. Hamburger. Nobody walks out of this alive. I'm on fire right now.
Why don't we move to our next section, which is trivia. For that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Hey, this is the part we can give back to a lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online, because if you had $25, you go to a comic book shop. So we need a brave volunteer. If someone wants to just comment, pick me.
Oh, did David Quinley already say me?
He said, I'll do it.
Ooh, so quick. All right, there we go. Why don't we do David Quinley then? He got blocked out last time, so there you go.
All right, great. All right. Today's trivia is on fun facts about comic book artists and a small nod to the legend, Tom Smothers. R.I.P. Yo-Yo
Ma. Yes! Shouts to Tom Smothers. I love it.
All right. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. Which amazing artist is from Canada and won lots of awards, including Best Artist, Best Colorist? Is it A, Fiona Staples, B, Feeling Paperclips, or C, John Hans Tester?
Wow. The level of nonsense in 2024 is up.
High level. Did we? I think this is in the next stack. We have Feeling Paperclips' new book, which is
right. Yeah.
Very bad.
Feeling Paperclips, he said.
Letterkenny?
Shout outs to Letterkenny. Final season. What a great show.
A
is correct. Well done. Fiona Staples is from Canada. She won many awards. Here we go. Question number two.
Poor Feeling Paperclips.
No, that wasn't the right choice. All right, here we go. Question number two. This artist studied improv and performed for years, plus she won multiple Eisners. Is it A, Jill Thompson, B, F. Paul Tompkins, or C, Paul F. Tompkins?
Oh.
Nice.
Real changing around of the letters there.
Yeah, it really is.
Don't expose his
where
process.
You put
oh,
sorry.
F. It really
sorry
makes a big difference.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it really does. F. Yeah. Pete LePage.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a hard one, though. It's hard to figure out which of the three answers is correct.
Yeah, it's tough. That's why I'm not giving any hints. It should
is
be.
It
yeah.
Is it A?
It is A. Oh,
wow.
My God.
There we go. David got 2 out of 2.
All right, here we go. Last one. This amazing artist was also born in Canada, but raised in Southern California. Is it A, Canadian tuxedo board shorts, B, Chris Bocciolo, or C, Rusty Schwimmer?
I would love to know how you got from B to A, not to indicate which one it is, but
I would have a question where you started on this one. Did you start with B and go backwards to A?
Would you start with A and then ended up with B?
Can we just get a camera on during your trivia process? I'd like to record the 17 seconds it takes you to do the right thing.
There's some Googling. I assume Googling
Canadian
comic book artist.
I'll break it down for you guys. And David is correct. It is B. But I was thinking, okay, what's Canadian? Well, a Canadian tuxedo. What's how do we get California in there? And that's how I added the board shorts. You know what I mean? Nothing's more California than surfing. You know what I mean?
Oh, nice. David, congratulations. You have won a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email and we will get it to you. Pete, what is the Secret Smothers Brothers, I'm going to assume, movie you are hinting at?
I was, of course, talking about the 2009 movie, The Informant.
Tommy
Both
Smug.
The brothers made a cameo. In
I it. Love the Smothers Brothers when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely like something I watched.
I had Yo-Yo Man.
Oh, Yo-Yo Man. I had yo-yos when I was a kid. But just the way, like, as a kid who was like, what? How are things funny? To see them play Crazy Man, Straight Man, they were just so good at it.
They were so good.
Tom Smothers playing dumb is just, if you've never seen the Smothers Brothers, look up some old clips of them just doing a regular late night.
You
want to
talk about Amazing Straight Man? Like,
It's shocking. Like, yeah. Tom Smothers, Tom got all the hype because he was doing the punchlines, but the straight manning of his brother is amazing.
Yeah. I saw them live once. I don't remember where or when, but it was the best. They were so good. As we all know, new comic books are coming out all the time. Pete, what are you looking forward to that's coming out?
Oh man, so much. I can't wait to talk to you guys in the stack. Transformers number 4 is amazing. Fables 161 is amazing. Petrolhead number 3 is amazing. And of course, Tear Us Apart number 4. Also just phenomenal. I'm sorry guys, I took a lot of
That is a lot. There's so many. I have questions to talk to you about, Pete. I want to shout out. I'll shout out a couple as well. Ultimate Spider-Man number 1, the Hickman book, is a. I'm curious what's happening here. I feel like it's going to be a wild ride. It certainly feels
great start.
Well, we'll see.
Potentially a great start. And I'm gonna maybe eat Alex's lunch a little bit and hype up Crave number 2. This book, the premise is an app that sort of gives you all of your sexual desires when pairing with someone else on this.
And would you say maybe the whole issue is fucking, maybe? Would you say that?
Again, we don't know because it comes out tomorrow, Pete. Show takes place today.
Huge difference, but I that book is the first issue was great. Oh, so very much looking forward.
Bunch of big books coming out this week or have already come out if they're from DC. You mentioned Ultimate Spider-Man, which is a huge one. Action Comics 1061, Jason Aaron writing Superman for the first time. That's pretty huge. We got Garth Ennis on James Bond, which will be interesting to talk about. Rise of the Powers of X number 1, continuing the end of the Krakoa era, should be big as well. And lots more stuff. The only other one that I was really curious to check out, just because we talked about how surprisingly strong this line is Disney Villains Cruella de Vil number 1 from Sweetie Boo. Just, I've liked all the titles, so I'm curious to see how this one turns out as well, because it hasn't come out yet, right, Pete? So we don't actually know.
We don't know.
But
I do have one more to shout out real quick.
Yeah,
I mean, Deep Cuts number 4, Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark with Ramon Perez on art. The first three issues of this book are so good. It's about like musicians from the 20th century, early 20th century musicians and their lives and just like the like jazz and blues scene around different parts of America. Man, it's a great book. Very much looking forward to this.
Yeah, and I'll throw out one other thing that I was excited based on the title alone. Acid Chimp versus Business Dog number 1 from Ahoy Comics.
Not what you think.
Not what you think, but you got Mark Russell and Steve Pugh on that, and that's always a good time. And all of those books, surprisingly, are going to be in our Stack podcast, which comes out Wednesday at 9 a.m. in the Comic Book
Right.
feed in its own dedicated Stack feed, so check it out. And folks, that is it for this week's show. Couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Joshua Williamson for coming on. Check out Cobra Commander number 1, January 17th, Duke number 2 on January 31st, both from Skybound and Image Comics. Dave Moss for talking about Death Strikes, the Emperor of Atlantis. That is out from Dark Horse Comics on January 24th. Next week, I plugged this last week, but it's actually next week. Mid Lee is going to be here to talk about Enlighten Me, and Charles Soule is going to be here to talk about Star Wars, 8 Billion Genies, and everything else he's working on. Don't forget to check out Comic Book Club News every day of the week for a quick hit of comic book news. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, we put up our What If Season 2 spoiler review, so check that out. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night!
Good night, folks! Later!
Thanks, everybody. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Good night.